Joining me now at the Pullman, where we're at the Kernel Conference, is the principal of My Fiduciary, Chris Douglas. Welcome, Chris. Nice to see you.
Hi, Phil. Nice to be here.
Good to hear you. So where I wanted to start with today was talking about PIE funds, and it's quite interesting. You were saying a couple of things. One is that there's been a huge number of new PIE funds coming to the market recently. Why do you think that is?
Yeah, there's a couple of reasons. So 80 new PIE funds in the last 3 years have come to the market, and you've had them from local fund managers bringing new products, but also a lot of Australian fund managers are launching products in New Zealand as well. And so with the local fund managers, we're seeing, first of all, one of the reasons is people are demanding more local NZD PIE fund structures. They're more tax efficient in many ways. They show a commitment to the local market. A lot of investors are saying, I only want to invest into PIE funds. So there's the demand for them. You're finding Australian fund managers, if they want to play in our market, then they've got to, they're thinking more seriously and they're actually bringing PIE funds into New Zealand. And then local managers like Kernel are setting up shop, and they've launched quite a few new products. So you're seeing more competition come about. I could name any one of different fund managers that have launched products, whether it be Harbour, Simplicity and the like.
And so you were saying recently, and I think we did a story on good returns, that at My Fiduciary you get to the stage where if it wasn't a PIE fund, you wouldn't put into your portfolios. How's your thinking going around that?
No. So just to be very clear, we still invest into non-PIE funds and AUTs. It really depends on the client. But there is a higher bar, and I think that's the point we were making, is that, you know, our first point of call is to say we'll invest into a PIE fund unless we can't find that strategy in New Zealand, we'll look for an AUT. If you're a charitable trust, then there could still be reasons to invest into a non-PIE vehicle. You might get lower fees, obviously the tax is not an issue, and you might get a differentiated product. However, as I said, more and more people are looking at PIE funds.
And is that partly driven by changes to the tax rates, which we think we're coming through?
It's partly driven by that, but there's just more choice. So if you think about, 5 years ago, finding a good global equity fund, you typically had to go to Australia. Now you can find all these great global fund managers that have got New Zealand PIE fund structures. You don't need to go offshore necessarily anymore.
Yeah. As I said, we're going to jump around a little bit today. Yep. So one of the other things you were saying when you're up on stage was people are obsessed, they get obsessed about income when they're putting portfolios together, and you say, well, that's just rubbish. Well, not sure that was the word you used, but you said that they shouldn't be. Why is that?
So you've got to think about a total return from a total return perspective.
So that's income plus capital.
Income plus capital. And I think a lot of people focus so much on not touching the capital, letting that grow, but getting the income off their portfolio. And you can do that if you've got a good custodial structure that most advisors do, I think all advisors do, then clients can just have a regular withdrawal process coming out of their portfolio, and they can take sometimes capital, sometimes income, depending on what's happening. And it doesn't really matter. You don't have to just be focused on getting the income and only getting that income off the portfolio.
So to me, that's interesting, but that seems to go against it appears to me it's been the thinking of advisors and investors.
It does go against it, but it goes against investors very much. They've got a psychological, behavioural view on their portfolio, and again, just getting the income, letting that capital to grow. But you can for sure just think about your portfolio being like a bank account and just taking money out, on a regular basis when you're in retirement, isn't it, and not thinking about income or capital.
Well, you made me change my thinking.
I doubt it, but anyway.
it was interesting. So then we jump into ESG issues. One of your frustrations is some of these companies who do ESG ratings. What's your frustration there?
Yeah, okay. So when you're thinking about sustainability, ESG, it's really tricky to actually look at a portfolio through an overall ESG lens. So fund managers will come to you and they'll say, our portfolio is A-rated by Mercer. Great. But if I want to dig into that and understand, how it stacks up environmental, social, governance factors, there's just some really strange outcomes that don't always add up or make sense. A couple of examples. New Zealand and Australian REITs stack up really, really well on sustainability. And it's hard to know exactly why. So you get a big environmental tick for a lot of those, even though the amount of bricks and mortar and concrete that's gone into some of these big buildings to set them up, they shouldn't get a good ESG rating necessarily. There's other funds, companies in New Zealand that because of their poor disclosure or not disclosing enough to the ESG companies, they get a poor rating. Infratel is one example. When you look at their business and what they're doing, I don't know if they should have a poor ESG rating, but it leads to more confusion from investors and clients, questioning the portfolios, questioning some of the underlying investments where they don't need to. And that's the issue I have with it.
And so is that one of the reasons why we're starting to see a bit of pushback against ESG and RI? Because, I mean, it's not so much in New Zealand, but certainly when you go to America, there seems to be a lot of pushback now.
There's a lot of pushback because I think people, first of all, one of the pushbacks I have is that just transparency and understanding about the ESG rating firms and their process and being able to dig into it and understand how a company scores the way it does. But the other point that you're getting at is I think people went a little bit too far down the path of, blacklisting companies or focusing on, carbon when we didn't have good enough data. This journey that we're on, and we're definitely on it, and it's not changing even in the US, the sustainability focus and journey we're on, it's continuing, but... But I think we need to make sure that as we go along, there's some robust measures, processes in place.
So is there a place for these agencies?
Absolutely. Yeah. And they play a really important role. They're going to play an increasingly important role, especially around carbon, as we're, economies, companies make this pledge to move to net neutral by 2050. Getting that data, getting the transparency, they're going to play a really big role there, and that's where there's some good information coming through.
And it was interesting, you put up a slide today with a number of new funds which had sustainability in their titles. It was quite a big list.
There's a lot of funds out there, and they're all... Sustainability will mean something different depending on the fund manager, the style, the part of the market they're investing into, the exclusions they use. It's a catch-all phrase that seems to have taken off. And you've got to read the label to understand what it means.
And just finally, Kernel and Heathcote came to you to create some model portfolios. We've just talked to Clayton from Heathcote about it. Tell me about that process. How hard was it to put those portfolios together when you had that suite of products, or was it easy?
Yeah, well, it was a really interesting exercise, and certainly one that came a little bit out of left field. We create a lot of model portfolios for a number of different advice groups and different clients that we work with. And we've got a framework that we use that's relatively consistent from an asset allocation perspective. But then it depends on the client in terms of some of the building blocks. I mentioned them this morning in my presentation, whether the type of tilts you might have to certain market factors, how much high yield you might have in the portfolio. We augment it when we understand the client's philosophy, what led them to achieve, and also their sustainability framework that they might employ as well. Heathcote said to us, and Kernel, they said to us, here's our list of funds. Can you go and build a portfolio off that? And they didn't really give us much more guidance apart from that.
So it's pretty much an open brief.
Open brief. So it was a fun project to do. The first question we had was, do they have enough products to actually build a portfolio? What are the gaps? And there really aren't any. You could certainly say global bonds is a gap. The Kernel US bond fund, we think, more than makes up for that. It's not a perfect global bond exposure, but it's pretty good, actually. There's certainly in the global equities, you probably want a value manager, typically, but you don't need one. Heathcote's got a manager called Schroders. They've got a quality and value process or factor tilts in their process. So you're kind of getting that in some way, shape or form there. Not all PIE funds. So there's some AUTs in the mix, and that's okay. But there's 50-50. We actually went for a 50 relatively even ratio of PIE funds and Heathcote funds.
Kernel funds.
Heathcote and Kernel funds. One of the cool things about the mix is that you've got very active managers in Heathcote and differentiated active managers. And then you've got low-cost passive through Kernel. Not all funds are with Kernel are passive. cash in New Zealand fixed are actually active in that sense.
And the I think your overall fee number was quite interesting too.
Yeah, well, you can get... This is the thing that I think when you have good portfolio construction processes, you can still have some really good active levers in your portfolio and some differentiated exposures in your portfolio. But we were able to get those portfolios at, you know, the low risk profiles, you know, is, I think the fee is about 36, 37 basis points, and it goes up to mid-40s, high 40s for the high-risk portfolios. Yeah. Very competitive.
Yeah, that's great. Look, thank you for your time, Chris. We have to wind it up now, so and good listening to you today. So thanks for coming in.
No, thanks, Phil. Well, yeah. It's good to talk to you.
Cheers. Thank you.